And now, from the world's leading maritime and offshore news website, gcaptain.com, comes the talk show for maritime professionals and enthusiasts, bringing you the latest news, discussion, and interviews with the industry's movers and shakers. This is GCaptain Radio with your hosts, Jeff Eccles and Captain John Conrad.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of GCaptain Radio. My name is Jeff Eccles and in the studio with me is John Conrad. Welcome, John. How are you doing?
Wonderful overcast day here in Morro Bay.
A typical summer day on the bay here, Estero Bay in the city of Morro Bay.
I had to turn my heater on this morning.
Holy Toledo. Yeah, well, welcome to summer on the ocean. This broadcast is for the week of July 15th, 2013. Listeners, this is the place we bring you the latest news and happenings in the maritime and offshore industry. So today we have several interesting topics to talk about. First off, something we've touched on before, piracy. We have a disturbing tale of piracy by, I believe it was some Somalis, and we'll talk about that. Also, what is appearing now to be a cursed ship story, some more complications with the MOL Comfort. That was the ship that split in two. So there's been a never-ending string of news coming from that situation, and we have some peculiar news coming out of the Comfort. Lastly, there was a collision at sea that we'll hit on, two ships that are apparently linked together in a way that you don't want to have two ships linked together. And then we'll talk a little bit of the background of, if we've got time, of John's background and hit on some things going on at GCaptain and maybe even share a few stories from a merchant mariner turned economist. That's yours truly, Jeff Eccles. So, John, piracy is an issue that we've hit on before. Safety in the seas is, of course, paramount. We talked before about the Western African states getting together and using some of the Eastern African states' tactics that are being used there to avoid piracy. And we also, I think you mentioned a couple weeks ago, that piracy has been reduced and subdued to a substantial degree off the coast of Somalia and in that region there. Yet we are reading today, and you've got a great story posted on gcaptain.com, that the MV Albedo was actually sunk by Somali pirates. And unfortunately, the really sad part of the story is that 15 crew members are missing. This was a Malaysian-flagged vessel, and it was hijacked by Somali pirates, wow, way back in 2010. So what's the background story on this, John?
Well, the really good news is that piracy off the coast of Somalia has been solved for the best ship owners. The best ship owners know how to get the private security teams that are preventing these pirates. Some of the not so great ship owners are still struggling with the issue, but we've seen major declines in the number of piracy events. But this has led to the problem that people are really starting to forget about this piracy issue. It's not hitting the headlines, definitely not the national. You know, last year was the big thing at all the maritime conferences. This year, the big topic is the financial crisis, how ship rates are really down low. I haven't heard much talk about piracy at the maritime conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And that's concerning mostly for because there's still a number of ships in Somalia that are under the control of Somali pirates. And one of them was this vessel, a Malaysian-flagged container ship owned by Iranians that recently sunk.
So this was under the control of pirates then since 2010. So we're talking going on 3 years.
Yes.
Wow. So they've been in control of the vessel, and assumably the crew was on board this whole time? So we're in addition to the piracy, we've got a hostage situation, it sounds like.
Yes, the junior crew, the senior officers, including the captain, were released last year, which is a bit unusual. The captain was Pakistani, and last year there was a national movement in Pakistan to release Pakistani hostages, Somali pirates. And apparently there was this whole grassroots national campaign where people sent in donations and there was some matching funds, and I'm not sure how much the government contributed, to pay the ransom for Pakistanis that were on these ships.
Hmm.
So in November last year, Captain Jawed Khan, the captain of the Albedo, was on the ship doing his normal duties. And he said his biggest job was really keeping the pirates calm. He said they were trigger happy. And he actually witnessed one of his crew members shot by these pirates.
Mm.
So that was the biggest, dealing with those and maintaining crew morale. So he was subject to unspeakable torture. The worst example was they took pliers and ripped off the skin of it on his palms. And they used to huddle them all in the small pool and denied them food and water and bathrooms for up to 3 days at a time. So these were immense psychological pressures and physical pain for this captain. And then in November last year, he was suddenly released. Well, he didn't want to go, Jeff. He had his crew to look after. Only seven of these members of the crew were Pakistanis, and those were the only ones who were paid for. And the rest of the crew had to remain there. And he demanded to the pirates that he stay on board the ship. And they said, no, you've been paid for. We have to let you go. Mm-hmm. And they took him away from his vessel. And the ship has been sitting there since August of last year that he was released. It's been sitting there for over a year, deteriorating. There's no maintenance being done on these vessels. And without its senior leadership on board.
Well, that sheds a little bit better light on the officer versus crew situation. As you know, John, I sailed for 2 years as a lowly ordinary seaman. So when you first told me that the officers were released and the crew was left on board, that's disturbing to hear. But it sounds like the officer wanted to stay on board and really had no choice but to leave as well. Are you, to your knowledge, are there a number of these ships still floating out there, just other vessels that are floating out there around the world? It seems they almost become their own nation state of a, well, I don't want to say forgotten, but at least stranded crew, pirated crew. Is this going on still?
I think forgotten is an appropriate word. We updated on G-Captain, but you don't read about these ships very often in, frankly, any media outside of G-Captain. I don't see many updates on the story. There's some national, and the other crew were Indian, Bangladesh. There was one Iranian on board. So you read about it in some of their local papers, but not a national. So yes, there are these ships that are sitting there hijacked. There are links on our website where you can go and you can actually view the number of ship and the number of crew and their nationalities. But yes, I think forgotten is an appropriate word, Jeff.
So is there any singular agency or international organization that would be responsible for combating this piracy? Or is it up to the individual countries, the nationalities of the crewmen that are on board? How does that part work?
Well, the IMO.
Oh, back to the IMO. One of our favorite topics here on the show lately.
Which, if you haven't heard it, go back to last week and we explain in depth why they don't have quick solutions for problems like this.
Right, and the IMO being the International Maritime Organization.
Yes, which is a branch of the United Nations. And the navies are in control. There is a task force comprised of a lot of the maritime countries. The U.S. Navy is a big part of that, and they're monitoring the situation. But they can't just go on with Navy SEALs because these crew members are constantly under the gun. Literally. Mm-hmm. They've been living on the ship for 3 years, and they're in constant fear of death. And on board this vessel, there was one crew member shot. But there have been very few mass casualties. It is very clear to the crew, and the captain made it clear when he got off, that all these people are interested in is money. And they equate each crew member to being a dollar sign.
Right.
So they don't want to, they want the ransom, they don't want to kill. But now we're getting into a whole nother problem here. Because it has been sitting there for so long, you know, the ballast valves and the maintenance and all this has not been taken care of. And the vessels are deteriorating. And in this case, this vessel sank.
Yeah, so in this case, the ship wound up going down. They've got 15 crew members missing, according to the reporting that you're doing on gcaptain.com. So it seems to me that as this continues to occur, and it looks like inevitably it will, these kind of situations, the heat would be turned up. And in doing the rather macabre weighing of options here, of weighing lives versus action, sure, when we send on a team of Navy SEALs onto a pirate-occupied vessel, the chance of losing life is going to be fairly high. But on the other hand, we have to weigh that against an incident like we just saw here on the MV Albedo, where the thing sank after 3 years from lack of maintenance and whatever else, and now we have 15 souls that have perished. So I don't know. It seems to me, John, that we need to be strong against these pirates I'd like love to see the IMO step up and do the work that's needed, or the U.S. Navy. I'm not sure exactly who, but it seems to me that it's an untenable situation the way it stands now.
Yes, and the other problem is, I said the IMO is responsible, but it's a chain of responsibility with the IMO at the top. And then the next level down is the flag states. This is Malaysia flag. I'm not sure what they're doing, what they did in this situation. And then the next down the chain is the owner. And this is, and then the captain, and the captain's been removed. So the owner is the bottom. He's the base of this chain. And the owner is Iranian. So we have no influence.
Yeah. So, yeah, the U.S.
force him to pay this ransom or deal with the pirates or even allow us to get Navy personnel on these vessels.
Yeah. It seems like the IMO needs to come up with, I don't want to call it a mercenary group, but maybe a coalition, a naval or maritime coalition of naval forces to combat this. It really needs to be done in an organized fashion, and it seems that that just hasn't occurred yet up to this point.
Well, another real solution is sending forces into Somalia to find these pirates, and that's been something we've been very unwilling to do considering our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
You're talking about putting boots on the ground, actually, to
find you have to find the leadership. These pirates are only, they're basically children. Most of them are between the ages of 16 and 20 years old, and they're all listening to a boss onshore.
Yeah.
So you can do what you want. You can send Navy SEALs. You can shoot the pirates. But as long as those bosses are still onshore running things, they're just going to find more recruits, and the problem will continue.
Yeah. I think it was about 20 years ago. I spent 2 months over in Kenya. It's a little bit of time on the ports in Mombasa, but I was basically touring the countryside. And one of the things that we were warned about was to stay out of northern Kenya because that approaches the Somalia border. And it was common that if you were out there just on your own, or even in a caravan of two or three cars, if you were unarmed without escorted guards, you were at risk of being
not even in the country, just near the country.
Just near the border, because they would come down and get unsuspecting tourists like me and others. And, and they were cruel. They would take everything you had and then kill you, just leave you by the roadside. So, yeah, it's a scary area. All right. Well, our condolences to the 15 crew members that were lost. And hopefully something will be done about this piracy situation. Anything else with regard to that, John?
There's still some hope. A lifeboat is washed up on shore, so there's some hope that some of the crew members made it off and now are in the hands of pirates on shore. We'll have to wait to see. This is an evolving story.
Yeah, and it's astounding, too, that it still exists in this day and age, that form of piracy.
Yes, and as we're squashing it in the East Coast, Somalia, it's popping up in on the West Coast, off of Nigeria.
Yep. So. All right. Well, we will continue to report on the piracy situation surrounding the African continent. So on our next story, we have what appears to be now, I'm calling it a cursed ship. That's the MOL Comfort, because this is a five-year-old ship that was floating along and split in two. and then we had two ships floating, and then half of it sank. If I remember right, it was the stern section. I think it was the...
Yes, okay. The stern sank.
So the aft section of the ship sank, and the forward section, with a lot of containers on it, stayed afloat, and the salvage operation was towing that forward section back in. The line broke at one point in time, so they had to reconfigure their lines and started towing it again. A few containers lost here and there, and then, lo and behold, a fire breaks out. So what's the update here on the MOL Comfort, what I'm calling the cursed ship?
I have absolutely no idea, Jeff. Makes absolutely no sense why a fire would break out spontaneously. And the cargo on these container ships is segregated. So if one container catches fire, they don't put hazardous materials next to it. Is it a manifest problem? I tend to doubt it. It's very unusual. Being mariners, we see things that normal people don't. We see unusual things out at sea that most of us don't like to talk about because we'd be considered a little kooky.
Right. Kookier than we already are.
Yes. Uh-huh. But the one thing mariners don't buy into is conspiracy theories, because we're out on the ships. We have an inside look into how we have friends who are on the Deepwater Horizon. We have friends who responded to the Exxon Valdez. We have a real inside view of this, and conspiracies don't really exist. So one word that you never see on the G Captain Forum is conspiracy,
mm-hmm.
but that's popping up now with questions of how you could lose all of that evidence on the bow that we needed to find this container weight. And I'm not a believer in conspiracies, and I do not believe this is a conspiracy yet. But the reason this question is popping up is because it just doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, I'm no engineer, but it seems to me you've got the forward section of the ship here that was being towed, cargo containers. I wouldn't think that there would be a lot of opportunities for flammable material to be ignited. You know, there's nothing running on it. It's basically almost a barge under tow, essentially, at that point.
Well, a few people said that some of these containers have diesel generators in it for some of the high-value cargo at these generators. But how much fuel? I've run a generator on my boat here, and it runs through a gallon an hour. How much fuel do these generators have? Not much. These generators would have died a long time ago, a week ago.
Right.
So that's not a plausible explanation.
No.
We just don't know. And you say cursed, but there are also significant man-made errors here. You know, we talked about some of the shipbuilding, the warranty last year. This ship was built out of a brand new type of steel that was used to be able to use less steel. So the big problem here is the amount of steel. You want to build a strong ship, you put more steel into that hull.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you make it stronger. But we're using these computer technologies, these new steel composites, to try to engineer less.
Right.
Less weight, less construction costs, less everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we're operating on these bare minimum margins. And the Classification Society just came out and said, this ship was 100% under class compliance. But are class compliances enough? Do the classes understand this new material, the steel? And class is just a minimum. Good owners go above standard.
Mm-hmm.
They put more steel than class requires. You know, so we're at this point where really the class is requirements, which have historically been this minimum, are becoming, you know, the standard.
Mm-hmm.
And all these new ships are being built at this minimum.
So if I were a conspiracy theorist, which I'm not.
Can an economist be a conspiracy theorist?
Well, yeah, maybe for a short time. wouldn't be able to stick around too long. But it seems that if there was something dramatically wrong with this ship that only a few people knew about, and they didn't want those deficiencies discovered, it would be to their benefit to get rid of this ship, which it seems to be going away bit by bit as it's being salvaged.
Yes, you know, and what's not a conspiracy is the Deepwater Horizon. We still don't have pictures of that.
Mm.
We never looked for the black box, which probably died in the explosion and the heat, but we don't know that. It certainly hasn't been recovered like airplanes.
Right.
Why? It's inconvenient. It's more work for the investigators. It's more work for BP, and they don't want pictures of this appearing on the news.
Right.
So that is a reason, and maybe you can call that a conspiracy.
Right. Well, and we have a vivid example here over the last week with the jetliner that crashed on approach in the San Francisco airport. And boy, I mean, everything about that is public, and the investigation, of course, couldn't be any more thorough. And it is such a contrast to maritime incidents and accidents. So you're absolutely correct with that.
And the other sad thing is when the report does come out, and we may not see it because it did not happen in territorial waters. So, but when it does come out, it's likely to blame the crew. They're going to say that they ballasted the ship wrong.
Mm.
And it doesn't matter how you ballast the ship. You can ballast the ship for it to flip over. So
right.
It turtles, capsizes, that
right.
would be a crew error. But it doesn't matter what tanks you use, you shouldn't create a problem. I mean, this would have to be gross negligence. And it's hard to get, even if you wanted to pay someone to take gross negligence, you can't because their lives are the ones at stake.
Sure.
So it's a lot of these investigations blame the crew, and are the crew to blame? In all cases, they do carry blame, but they're also... With minimum manning, these guys are tired, they're overworked, and the heavy weather. This is why these buffer zones have to be built. The ships have to be built above class standards.
Right.
In order to take into account basic human nature. Right. Not negligence by the crew, which is often the findings of these reports.
Right. And it seems to me a stretch. And listeners, here's a challenge to you. Email us here at gcaptain.com if you've got an idea on this. But it seems to me that you couldn't find enough crew negligence to cause a ship to break in half, especially a five-year-old ship.
Break in half, stern sink, bow explode.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's stretching credulity there to think that
there's something bigger happening here.
It sure seems like it. Okay, so the mystery of the cursed ship, the MOL Comfort, continues on. So we also had a collision at sea here recently. This was two cargo ships that, after colliding, got locked together in the Aegean Sea. And that's something we don't hear too much about, thank goodness, or collisions at sea. I mean, let's talk a little bit about, just about, because you've got experience as a sea captain. You were in charge of the bridge. I've got experience as a helmsman. I was on little 285-foot, well, not so little, 285's all right, it's respectable. I was on 285-foot research vessels for 2 years, and most of what I did was a helmsman up on the helm, so I was steering the ship. I know that in our situation, we did a really good job up on the bridge of avoiding collisions, and we never came close. I know also there were times when we took evasive action when we couldn't hail another vessel on the radio. There were certain types of vessels I remember, particularly some of the container ships, that they just plowed along and they did their thing, and we would stay wide of them. But what's your outlook on collisions of seas? And in this case, we've got two cargo ships, which are two good-sized vessels, that hit each other. I mean, in theory, that shouldn't happen.
It certainly shouldn't happen, especially with new technology. I mean, AIS is groundbreaking technology. Even if the radars don't work, you still have a plot of this vessel.
So AIS, describe that for us.
AIS is a system where the ship's latitude and longitude, all the information from the GPS, plus some other fat things like the gyro compass, the ship's heading, turn rate, are all broadcast over a VHF channel.
Wow.
That sounds like one of those old 1980s computer modems, if you were tuned to it. And it's picked up by the chart plotting software on the computer, and it lays these vessels right down on the chart. But the great thing about is...
We didn't have that, John, 20 years ago when I was sailing. 30 years ago.
We didn't have it 10 years ago. No. My first AIS with integrated ECTIS ship that I was on was just 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So not being able to call, for example, that's a thing. There's still ships that just don't answer. And there's some ships that don't speak English very well.
Yes.
But they can't feign ignorance now because the AIS tells you the exact name of the ship. So we used to call them saying ship in latitude XX, longitude XX, going speed on a course, come back. And they wouldn't respond. But now we say, you know, the ship, and we give the exact name.
Wow.
And you can also set an alarm off on that bridge, and you can call the ship on its Inmarsat number, look up its phone number right in the ITU publication.
Holy Toledo. Well, this is great. Technology is really advancing.
Yeah. But it's not solving all our problems because, I mean, the majority of the problems are training. We have a lot of new ships, a lot of new mariners. You also have minimum manning, a lot of tired crews who are sleepy, a lot of one-man bridges where there's only one person on watch.
Seriously?
So there's no redundancy.
Just one person up on the bridge?
Absolutely.
Wow.
I can't, countless hours I've spent on a lot of the better ships, the U.S. flagships that I was working on, you would have one guy on the bridge during the day, and then at night they'd put a second one of the ABs. But during the day, the AB would be down working, doing maintenance.
So was your one person then on the bridge at the helm?
I mean, no.
Or did you just on the autopilot?
It would be on autopilot.
So
and if we
mic.
Came to a situation where we had to maneuver, I would call the AB or have to maneuver myself. And also the captain's always available.
Interesting.
So there were a couple occasions where I'd call up the captain and I'd go on the helm and he'd take the command of the ship.
Okay.
But
interesting. It's fun. It's fun for me to talk about because, I mean, our situation back then was we had either an AB or an ordinary seaman, an OS like me, at the helm, and we always had at least one of the officers on the bridge. So at all times we had two people on the bridge, and of course I wasn't. You know, the helmsman was just the helmsman. That's all we did, and we just took direction from whatever officer was up on the bridge. And even if we had the iron mic on, you know, on autopilot, we still. The helmsman still stood there, and that would get a little old at times, but yeah. We had 4-hour watches. So, you know, if we were on the Iron Mike, we'd stand there for 4 hours and
you'd be a second set of eyes,
yes.
Another lookout. You'd see these ships, you'd give a little early warning and you could help out.
Yep.
One of the biggest causes of collisions, and this is something that's unreported, is actually the captain coming up on the bridge. Because the captain has an idea of the ship's maneuverability, but he's most likely been down in his office for a number of hours doing paperwork, dealing with crew. He doesn't know the current sea conditions. He doesn't know the current traffic. He hasn't been talking to VTS or listening in on the radio. One person's on the bridge, the officer, he needs help. He's overwhelmed. He's really tired. He doesn't understand, you know, there might be a communication issue or there are other problems. He calls the captain up to the bridge. Captain comes up. He sees a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes command without having been on the bridge and understanding their route, without taking the time to sit in front of a chart, listening on the radio conversation. And all that thing, when you're sitting up there for 4 hours, that's all information.
Mm-hmm.
And you do a turnover. Is that correct? The officers and even the helm, you tell the next guy about. Well, when a captain comes up in an emergency situation, he doesn't have time for that 15-minute turnover.
Right.
He just jumps in not knowing all the information and often, usually makes a good decision because he has experience, but not always.
And I might point out, listeners, this is coming from a sea captain. John, you are a captain. So how would you avoid that when you were actually captain in a ship, when you were the master?
I would hire guys who I really trusted and give them resources. By the time I was captain, I was on a dynamically positioned ship with a really great owner and a large crew. So we'd have two officers on the bridge. And sometimes a lookout if there was any traffic. So there would be three guys on the bridge at all times. And I would come up just as a manager, looking to see how can I... The best thing a captain can do is have guys they trust, multiple guys, and go up there and just work for them. Find the problems and help them fix it. Instead of jumping in and demanding we do this, that, and the other thing, saying, what's your solution? How can I help find the problems, fix them, and help you do your job better? And taking command, taking over the watch is really the last resort of a captain. Because the watch officer shuts down at that point. You know, when as helmsman,
right.
You were yelled at the captain, did you perform better or worse right after being...
Right, I get your point.
...making a mistake.
Yep. Of course, as helmsmen, we were kind of fortunate too because we had really very little responsibility. I mean, it was our job just to take the orders. So whether they were barked at us or asked politely, which didn't happen too often,
really,
we just had to do our job. So and we're just about out of time, John. But what would you? Because this is an interesting conversation. What would you say in your experience, because you've sailed both as mate as well as captain, is either singularly or a few of the most important attributes of a captain out at sea?
A captain really has to maintain situational awareness. He has to know exactly what's going on. He has to know his vessel inside and out. He has to know the route, the weather conditions, all that. And he has to constantly update that information. And he also has to develop, train, and monitor his crew members. You have to get to know the weaknesses. Everyone has their weaknesses and strengths. There is no perfect officer. There are people we consider good, but they're good in one aspect but poor in another.
Right.
And you have to find those weaknesses. And then that's what I do often in an emergency. I spent the greatest amount of time in my career as chief mate and was at a number of fires and a number of emergencies.
Mm.
And you know, if there's some guy, he's not very strong, he smokes a lot, I didn't suit him up in a fire suit, but he may be a great guy with a clipboard taking roll call and making sure everyone's accounted for.
Right.
So you have to know the specific weaknesses and manage your ship around those and always be staying up to date with new developments on the ship. And you just have to be knowledgeable.
So interesting. So a unique combination of management skills that aren't necessarily only related to maritime, but those management skills combined with that maritime experience and insight as well.
I don't think it's different from leadership anywhere else,
right,
except the time factor. When the ship is moving, there are no brakes. You have to make quick decisions. And unfortunately, a lot of times captains come up and they don't trust their crew, either because they didn't train them, or they wanted to fire them and they couldn't because of the company, or a number of reasons, and they just take command. And that's what, that was the primary cause of the Costa Concordia, the captain coming up and saying, we're doing this, and not listening to the complaints.
Yep.
But he had no excuses, because he had a number of, he had plenty of people on board, lookouts and a watch officer. But a lot of these ships, container ship, cargo ships, just one guy on board, he's tired, captain comes up, he doesn't know the situation, and it deteriorates quickly.
Yeah, surprising for me to hear that. I only have a couple of years experience out at sea, but it's surprising to me to hear that there would be single man bridges.
Yes.
Single person bridges. All right. Well, as always, John, we have a lot of fun when we do these broadcasts, and time goes much too quickly. So we are out of time for this week. Any closing thoughts as we sign off?
There are some great discussions about this on the forum. So, you know, it only takes a minute. We got a lot of people who read the forum but don't participate.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't require to know your name. We don't require that we know all your, you know, your social security number or that.
Right.
You can create a name. We just ask for your email. So don't be scared to go in there and ask these, even if they're dumb questions, because there's so many, I mean, there's centuries of maritime experience on our forums. If you got any questions about this story or any others, post it on the forum, and you're going to get a lot of great answers.
Excellent. All right, listeners. So there's an opportunity for you. Just sign on with your email address and a name, and you can post on the forums at GCaptain and get in on the conversation. Thank you for listening. Be sure to tune in next week to keep up with what's going on in the maritime and offshore industry. On behalf of John Conrad and myself, Jeff Eccles, we look forward to speaking with you again next week. Be well and be safe.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest in maritime and offshore news. GCaptain Radio is a production of GCaptain.com and is recorded weekly in Morro Bay, California. For more information or to be a guest on the show, visit GCaptain.com.